Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk. And this is going to be the fastest 20 minutes because we do have the interview with Alfred and James Corbett of the Corbett Report coming on in 20 minutes. And there's so much action going on in today's markets. We want to bring you up to date in the first 20 minutes for Thursday, October 9th, 2014. So let's get right into the markets today. Even though gold had a little bit of a sluggish, had a strong start, ended sluggish, but you haven't seen anything yet, folks. You have gold up $250 today at $1,225. Silver struggled a little bit to come off the high, came off the high of $17.81 at $17.47. Platinum was down 7 at $1,277, and palladium down 5 at $799. The USDX today showing stronger, 0.28 to the upside at 85.55. Crude oil got battered today, down 2.15 at 85.16. And the paper markets got hammered today. And I didn't see what the low was, if they came back off the lows to some degree. But we're looking at a 334.78 drop, almost a 2% drop in the Dow at 16,659. And we have the NASDAQ down 90 at 43.78. Little over 2%, the same way with the S&P down 40 at 19.28. So all the markets are basically down 2% on the day. And I didn't have the opportunity to see what the Fed moves were. I didn't know if they took any moves today, Al. Have you?
Nope.
I didn't see any. Their numbers, their minutes were released yesterday. But I really didn't think there was anything except maybe confirming that the economy is not as strong as they would like. But
yeah, there's that. And I think the Dow Jones, we've been looking at this for a month now anyway.
I know, for longer than a month, telling people that it's no way
it's going to go up and up and up and up and up. And I think the reality is 17,000 or thereabouts is probably a top for the Dow Jones. It's been up higher than that, but just for the last month, it's probably averaged around 17,000. It's been as high as 17.3 or nearly so. 17,279 was a high for the month. It's been as today is the low 16.6. 16,663. It's not necessarily a big deal, but it does indicate that they're not going higher. There was a lot of talk about, oh, we're going to go beyond, we're going to go 18,000, 19,000, da, da, da. I don't think so. I think we've seen perhaps as high as we're going to see. And if that's true, then it means that the Dow is either going to stay where it is, more or less, or it's going to go deeper. It's going to fall deeper. And people also have been warning, you know, that the Dow is due for a serious correction. And some people talk in terms of 30% or more that the Dow may correct. And people have been talking about this for, you know, perhaps a couple of months now, maybe 3 months. My guess, two for sure. Maybe 3 months we've been hearing people who shouldn't, who might know what they're talking about. They're warning that we're due for a significant correction in the Dow. And we're due for a significant correction, not because the market is necessarily weak or flawed, but it's just the nature of the business. You can expect a significant correction in a bull market every so often. Right? That's just the way things work. Witness gold, witness silver. We've had a correction in that for the last 18 months. Perhaps going to see something similar now in the stocks, significant correction, and we can... It's not unreasonable to assume that when the stocks go down, the gold will go up.
Well, the thing of it is, you know, the numbers are coming out that's not supporting any of the hogwash that's been coming out of Washington, Wall Street, and every central bank across the world. Today, before Wall Street opened, the data showed that there was a 5.8% drop in German exports in August. You had the downbeat numbers that had German industrial orders and output falling as well. Mario Draghi of the European Central Bank saying that, you know, hey, there's indications. Woohoo, there's indications. Well, no kidding, Sherlock, that the Eurozone's economic growth is slowing and they need to strive to boost inflation. And this is what we've talked, Al's talked about for the past how many weeks and years. I mean, I don't know, you know, and now they're coming out and saying, oh, we need to boost inflation. Well, no kidding, Sherlock. You know, so then again, we go on to see, so the optimism is gone. They know that these Federal Reserves cannot continue unless they continue to create more and more money and put into these markets. And then you've got people dying all over the world. That doesn't help, and I think you're going to see a lot of fear. Clients said to me earlier today, do you believe that perhaps this, you know, we talk about black swans all the time. And yeah. She said, do you think the Ebola is the black swan? And I'll tell you what, if you read some of the headlines, you know, again, be prepared, not scared. And, you know, that's just not in your, you know, things that you do to prepare for your food, water, and so forth, but also finances, you know. So we're beginning to, you know, just go to and look at some of the headlines. I mean, there'll be a little fear in you. And what happens when your stockbroker is fearful? He doesn't want to show up for work. Who's going to answer the telephone to take your sell order?
I think one of the things we'll see with the Dow falling 300 points today, and it's, we've had a couple of 200, 270 point days in the last week or so. This isn't, you know, it's been interesting for a week or more. I think what's going to be lost is the irrational exuberance. That was a term Greenspan used to describe the stock markets back 6, 8, 10 years ago.
Well, the only ones that had irrational
exuberance. Every yay, it's going 18,000, it's going 19,000. Somebody's talking about going 25 or 30,000. We're going to get rich. That was irrational.
The only one
irrational is being pulled out. That means people are going to start looking around and say, "Wait a second, what can we do here that's sensible? Not just fun, not just hooray for our side. What can we do that's sensible?" And as they become more sensible, a lot of them are going to turn and say, "You know, gold looks like a pretty good deal to me."
The only ones that had irrational exuberance are the billionaires that continue to make money off of Wall Street and all these multinational corporations. But now even their numbers are not showing, but they're the ones that showed all this. And Wall Street, you know, they were giddy. They get giddy talking about all their numbers and how great it is. But then you got to remember, folks, they're paid to say those things. They're paid to suck you in to the shop, to the shares, and not just sell what you have and go into something that's a little bit more safe.
Well, it's just, it's more evidence that the system is vulnerable. All right.
It's more
it's
than
not
vulnerable.
It's not strong. It's fragile. And
it's
all
history.
By itself. That's the kind of thing you look at and you say, well, here we are in a boat that might sink. Maybe it will, maybe it won't, but it might sink. Do you think it's a good idea to have a life preserver or not have a life preserver?
Well, I think we're beyond suggesting or knowing whether it's going to sink or might not sink. I think we're pretty much in the ship that's going to sink. And it's just a, you know, it's just a, we don't know which end. We don't know which end.
Yeah, we don't know which end to go down first, but it won't much matter a great deal. Because if it's the stern that goes down first, those that rush to the bow, you're going with the stern. And those, you know, vice versa, if the bow goes under first, if you run to the stern, you're still going to the bottom with the boat. The trick is you've got to get into the one of the lifeboats. You've got to find a way to get off the major boat, which is the SS fiat currency. If you're going to hang on to your fiat currency, you're going to go to the bottom. And if you want to get away from this, you know, it's not necessarily going to be easy or even comfortable, but if you want to get away from it, you're still going to want to get into that lifeboat. Get off the fiat currency, the ship made out of balsa wood and fiat currency, and get into something solid. It's like the sinking of the Titanic, and many people have seen the movie, read the book, certainly know the story. The people that got into the lifeboat were saved. It wasn't necessarily fun, but they were saved. And the people who didn't get into the lifeboat probably drowned and died. Point being, if you want to survive, you want to get into that lifeboat. You want to look around and say, look, I think the fiat currency boat is going down. Where do I want to be? I need a lifeboat.
And you know what's really amazing? Here you have, you know, what's going on in our economy. Here you have the Ebola. Here you, they're coming out with more about the White House, the Secret Service. Prior to the election, they kept everything quiet because of the prostitution scandal. You have all these scandals, all this stuff going on. People are becoming more fearful, but yet, you know, they're trying to calm the public and everything. And Obama and every politician out there is lobbying, trying to raise money for their stupid elections.
Yeah,
you have Obama shutting down L.A., Louisiana streets. I don't know if it was Louisiana or I just am reading, looking at the headlines, with Gwyneth Paltrow, probably L.A.,
yeah,
for money, for fundraiser.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
I mean, that's what it's all
you
about.
Can't,
like,
you
what
can't,
is wrong with these people?
You can't rob people all the time. Part of the time, you also have to take contributions. Otherwise, how do you explain where all the money came from? You know?
But I'm talking about, where's Congress in all of this? Well, they're talking about
their
20...
belly up to the trough. That's where they are.
Where is everybody?
Yeah.
I watch the news in the morning. I don't see any politicians being interviewed.
I know.
I don't see any congressmen being interviewed on their opinions on what should be done. The only one that I've actually seen is your mayor or your governor.
Perry.
Yeah. And then I think to myself, Perry, huh? Him and Obama got into this mess. And it is interesting that this first case of Ebola is in Texas.
Yeah, Obama Ebola.
I'm all fired up today, Al.
I understand that. We're going to put you on the decaffeinated next Friday.
No, it isn't
Friday.
That. It's the urgency that the people, the listeners, have to understand.
Well, I agree.
And I wish this would all just go away. I wish we had politicians that could come in there and say, look, we're going to address these problems, and this is how we're going to start. But there's no one there, so you have to protect yourself. You have to take action. And if you think Wall Street or Washington is going to take care of you, you're sadly mistaken. You always want to do the opposite of what they do. You always want to believe the opposite of what they tell you, because you know they're going to flat out lie to you.
That's
you will
the
not
problem.
Be told the truth. I mean,
you might someday, but how would you know? You know, we are dealing with 435 congressmen, 100 senators, and one president who have been crying wolf on a regular basis. And a lot of people are simply sick of listening. We're not paying attention. Holler wolf all you want. We don't listen. We don't believe you anymore because it's been false so many times. Now, once they lose the public's confidence, and we no longer trust them to tell the truth, what are you going to do? How do you regain that? And it's a terrible disability for the government. I mean, we don't generally believe them. I don't care what they're saying. They may be telling the truth sometimes. I still don't believe them. Why? Because they've lied and they've lied and they've lied and they've lied and they've lied. And we know that. They've lied about the inflation rate, lied about the unemployment rate, lied about the size of the national debt. You know, lie on lie on lie. Eventually you say, I just don't believe these people anymore. And you can't run a successful government if the people don't believe what you're saying. And this is just another evidence that we are in a fragile era, all right? And
here's another headline now. The St. Louis Emergency Operations Center will be activated on Thursday afternoon until Tuesday. They're going to activate it in response to information because of planned demonstrations over the holiday weekend. And we all know St. Louis is, you have Ferguson protesters. They're planning mass demonstrations in St. Louis starting Thursday, today. And this whole organization is called Weekend of Resistance. I want to know who's behind these weekend and these demonstrations to get things fired up in a time when people are already fired up, when people already have all these
concerns.
Well,
that's exactly, you know, you strike when the iron is hot. That's what it comes down to. If you're going to be a political organizer, it's hard to organize people when they're fat, dumb, and happy. You have to take advantage of the fact that they're already a little unstable. And then you offer them some promise of stability, or you offer them a target, and you say, this is the guy to blame, or this is the guy that will save you, and people come running one way or the other. It's just the nature of things on one level. The question is, will the people in St. Louis really respond to this call for mass demonstrations? And I don't doubt that some will.
Well, sure. There's a question. Well, they know who, they know which ones to fire up.
How many? You know, the thing that's difficult, this is a consequence of the shooting in Ferguson, Missouri, back a month or more ago. And we're demonstrating on the life of a young man who was unarmed, but big boy. He was seen videotaped stealing some stuff just an hour or two before he was shot. I mean, the guy is, this would have been a much better opportunity for blacks. If they want to protest police violence, they would have had a much better chance if they'd had an innocent person. This guy wasn't exactly innocent. And we don't even know to this day whether or not he charged the cop or not. Some people say he charged the cop. The cop shot him after he'd already been punched in the eye one time by this kid. And the cop shot him while he was charged. And other people say he was standing there with his hands up. I don't know what the truth is, but one of the things about it, you don't know the truth, it doesn't justify an overreaction. You got to nail these things down before you overreact. Right?
Well, I'll tell you what. I wouldn't want to be in paper going into a three-day weekend. Not this weekend. There's stuff coming from every direction. So, folks, you got a day, you know, to if you need to do anything, if you need to move some money around and so forth and get some gold, give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Hopefully, come Tuesday when we do a program. We might have a live program. It is a holiday weekend. Banks and post offices are closed on Monday. We'll probably have a live show on Monday.
Is Congress going to be closed?
They're always closed. What are
well,
you talking
if,
about?
Yeah, there's cause for celebration.
They're
you
always
know, if
closed
they shut
down.
The Congress down, all right, let's time to party down. They can't do any damage if they're not in office, if they're not meeting. In any case, we're out of time.
I think it's beyond that. So, but we'll be back tomorrow, of course.
And James Corbett and I will be following in just a couple of moments after we do the commercials. James Corbett from the Corbett Report will be talking about global circumstances in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemic. pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand. Have a plan. Have peace and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663, or thepowerherbs.com.
Prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. Frank, the producer, has generously allowed me to know whether our guest was or when it was not here about a second and a half before the program, the second segment, began, and James Corbett is here. All right. I'm going to make Frank pay for that one way or another. I'm not sure what I'm going to do, but he got to give me that word in advance. Otherwise, I get anxious about these things. I don't know whether the guest is or is not here, and it puts me in a state of high anxiety. I feel like Mel Brooks. Hello, James. How are you doing?
I'm doing a lot better than you, I guess. I'm doing pretty good.
I'm doing fine. This is James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com. That's C-O-R-B-E-T-T report.com. James has been living in Japan for the past decade. He's published the Corbett Report since 2007, if I recall correctly. And James is interesting, because I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to think of, you know, are there subjects that we can talk about, James, that you don't have any background in?
And
I'm
having
a hard time. Yeah, I'm sure that's true for everybody. You're knowledgeable about a lot of different items and knowledgeable in depth. And that's what surprises me. We have a hard time. I have a hard time finding questions for James that James can't speak on extensively and articulately. So let's try another episode. What's happening in Hong Kong? And what I mean in particular, I've seen one report that the people of Hong Kong don't feel like they're part of China. Is that a sign? Do you think that's you know, I mean, it wouldn't be everybody, but they feel like they're not part of China. They don't want to be part of China. Is that a significant percentage of the population that feels that way, or is it an exaggerated report? And has everything calmed down?
Well, I wouldn't say that people have calmed down. I wouldn't say that that's an exaggerated report. I think that the people in Hong Kong clearly see themselves as quite different than mainland Chinese. And specifically, I mean, there's all sorts of cultural differences, historical differences, political differences, and even linguistic differences that separate Hong Kong and Beijing. So I think that there obviously it is a unique culture within the Chinese society, I guess, under that Chinese umbrella. Speaking of umbrellas, I mean, obviously the protests are still going on, the so-called umbrella revolution, and it's quite interesting to watch this develop, because it certainly is a pattern that we've seen in a lot of similar types of revolutions that have taken place in recent years, Arab Spring and others, where there is clearly and has been and continues to be outside influence in what's going on there. And a number of commentators in the alt media have pointed to the connections of some of the so-called self-appointed leaders of the Occupy Central movement as being connected to the National Endowment for Democracy and the U.S. State Department's favorite NGO and other such organizations that have shady links to various Washington-connected political think tanks and what have you. And those types of connections, as I say, have popped up in all of these color revolutions and things that we've seen in numerous different countries over the years. But I'm starting to become a little bit disheartened by the level of analysis that I've seen in a lot of these alt media reports, because I certainly do agree that there's no doubt that the United States State Department and its various organs and connected interests certainly do have a vested interest in seeing the Hong Kong and China tension exacerbated and seeing further destabilization on the peripheries of Chinese society, because that ultimately works towards the foreign policy interests of the U.S. State Department. And it's sort of long war with China that it's simmering under the surface right now. And I get all of that, and that's been well documented and deservedly so. But at the same time, I think of this from the perspective of someone in Hong Kong who, for example, I mean, part of what's going on here is the Beijing is coming in and saying we are going to pre-select the candidates for the 2017 election, which supposedly had been guaranteed to be part of a universal suffrage election that was going to be selecting the chief executive of Hong Kong, like the president or prime minister or what have you of Hong Kong, which, of course, isn't a country. It's a special administrative region. That election was supposed to be universal suffrage and was supposed to be basically anyone could run. But now Beijing is coming along and saying, nope, well, we will select who will be allowed to run. And so, I mean, that's there's obviously a lot more to the story, but that's sort of the immediate impetus for what we're seeing right now. And you see the alt media analysis of this going, well, look, this is just Washington interfering and trying to sponsor. But I look at this from the perspective of people in Hong Kong who it really does seem to me that the if we follow the logic of a lot of these alt media commentators, then basically if a country is being targeted by the U.S. State Department apparatus, like China obviously is, then the people who are in that system, who are living in that country, cannot, should not in any way protest against what that government is doing to it, because that's working in Washington's policy interests, which is a ridiculous way of looking at it. I think that the people suffering under oppression from the oppressive Beijing government have every bit as much right to be absolutely outraged about their position as people in the United States have to complain about the suffering and the oppression that they're suffering under Obama, for example. Absolutely as much right. Human freedom is a human thing, and I think that it's kind of short-sighted of a lot of the alt media to focus on this in as if the people of Hong Kong should only care about the U.S. and its State Department goals when they're talking about what is actually happening to them under the oppressive Beijing government. So it's complicated. There's a lot going on, but I think that the underlying narrative is that that people in Hong Kong generally, a lot of them, are fed up with Beijing, and I think deservedly so.
Well, it's interesting to wonder why is our government willing to attempt to stir the hornet's nest in Hong Kong. They can't imagine that they're not going to get caught. They can't imagine. If that's what they're doing, they have to know it's going to be exposed and it will antagonize China. And you described, you used the language, the long war with China, to describe the American government's relationship with China. So where are we really with China? Is this just open? Not a kind. Are we dealing with a kind of cold war with China? Even though we're doing a lot of business with them, is there a cold war going on where we're trying to needle them? They're trying to needle us. And is it going to get hotter? Stay cold? What's going to happen here?
Well, Alfred, did you ever watch Star Trek? The original
yes.
series? Yes. You might recall that Spock used to occasionally play a game of three-dimensional chess.
Yes.
And they never really explained the rules of this, but they showed the board, and there are different levels on the board. Basically, it's like a chessboard, but split into different levels, and I guess the pieces can move upward and downward as well as left and right. And the idea is that I think there's a two-dimensional chess game taking place geopolitically and a three-dimensional chess game. And we can look at the two-dimensional chessboard and think we know what's going on. But if we don't understand that this is a three-dimensional chess game, we're going to lose that chess game every single time because we just don't understand the bigger rules of what's happening. So I think the two-dimensional chess game of what's happening right now is that China and the U.S. are involved in a Cold War-type scenario where the U.S. State Department is using its various apparatus, and obviously NATO is involved in this, is surrounding China militarily, politically, is stirring the pot in places like Xinjiang with the Uyghur Muslim minority there, in places like Hong Kong through demonstrable links of certain Occupy Central members to the National Endowment for Democracy and other such links. That is going on, and that is part of a Cold War scenario that is playing out right now that includes the increasing tensions in the Asia-Pacific region that we've talked about before and that I document on my website, where we see the so-called Asia-Pacific pivot that was announced by Hillary Clinton a few years ago, back when she was at the State Department, and which is going on to this day as we see the defense budgets of every single player in the region is ramping up at this point as they prepare for some sort of military conflict. So we see all of that going on, and I think that's the two-dimensional chess game. I think the third dimension is what you're talking about with the business interests and the links between the U.S. and China. And it is so important to understand that bigger picture that if we don't understand that, then we're going to lose the chess game altogether. And that goes into the history of the Chinese U.S. relationship and how China came into the position, the economic and geopolitical and military position that it is in today. And that is through a series of coordinated efforts that have been made to build China into the economic juggernaut. It's not exactly an economic juggernaut at this point, but at least growing economic power that it is today, that could not have taken place without those coordinated efforts that have taken place over decades to do a number of different things. Build up the business and manufacturing infrastructure of China, which has been participated in by some of the biggest Fortune 500 corporations in the world, to change the tax regulations in the United States to incentivize the offshoring of labor and manufacturing to China in order to, again, build up that manufacturing behemoth, and all of the political machinations that have made China into this sort of quasi-partner with the United States in various ways. And I think we can start to get a handle on that when we actually drill down into the types of people who are puppeteering, I think, this third dimension of the chessboard. And when you start to get into that, you start to look at, for example, just as one notable example, David Rockefeller, writing the obituary for Chairman Mao in the New York Times back in the 1970s, hailing his Cultural Revolution as one of the great social experiments of all time, and saying, you know, what a loss it is if that momentum is lost. Of course, the Cultural Revolution being referred to killed a conservatively 60 million. Most people put that more at 80 million. 80 million people snuffed out by the Chinese government during that glorious revolution. But, of course, those types of details tend to be left out in those obituaries.
Well, there were four people who died, and that certainly wouldn't – I don't think that would – I don't think those count. Does it count when poor people die, or is it only rich people that matter?
One person dying is a tragedy. A million is a statistic. 80 million is a footnote, basically. So that's unfortunately how that works. But then, I mean, you extend that out into David Rockefeller's proteges and minions. For example, of course, Henry Kissinger, who has written a book on China and the U.S. and has on multiple occasions talked about China as a model for the New World Order. Or you look at George Soros on multiple occasions documented talking about China as the engine of the New World Order was the phrase that he used, and talking about how the economic powerhouse that it has been created in China is going to be the model for what is to come in the financial system. And then, of course, I mean, there's all the political connotations that come with that in a dictatorial society with the enforced one-child policy and enforced abortions and things of that nature being a model for the political future of the United States and elsewhere as these systems start to merge, which was the bigger picture that was pointed out repeatedly by Anthony Sutton in his work, first at the Hoover Institution and then as an independent scholar, writing about the ways that the Soviet Union and the Nazi Germany and the FDR presidency were all manipulated behind the scenes by the same banking interests that have a vested interest in keeping a sort of paper tiger enemy that they build up and use in this type of two-dimensional chess game. So, I again, it's extremely complicated. I'm going to be doing a podcast, hopefully in the next few weeks, about this and documenting the history of how China came into the position it is, so that we can understand that in this struggle, in this fight between the U.S. and China, I don't think there is a clean side. I don't think there's a good player in this game, because both sides are being controlled, essentially, I think, by the same interests, or if not controlled, at least, I think, puppeteered and string-pulled by the same interests that, again, are not working in the interests of the Chinese people or the American people or the people of anywhere else on the planet.
Then we're not really adversaries precisely so much as in-laws. Would that be accurate description?
That might actually be a good analogy.
What are we actually fighting? If our government is antagonistic, or at least competitive, are we competing with China in the sense of a national entity that's been there for a long time, or are we competing, are we promoting dissent in Hong Kong, ultimately to get at the Chinese government? Are we trying to overthrow something over there, lay the foundation for some sort of an internal revolution where China stays intact, but they have a different government before this is all over?
Well, again, I think that's the narrative that's being put forward by a lot of the people pointing out the NED connections to the umbrella revolution that's going on right now, that basically this is an attempt to install certain U.S.-backed or Washington-friendly interests in the Hong Kong executive position, which then would be a foil or a counterparty to what's happening in Beijing and could be kind of a foot in the door towards having a greater Washington influence in what's happening in China generally. So that would be, I suppose, that sort of 2D chess game version of what's happening there, and that would play into that idea that, again, these are adversaries in a type of Cold War scenario. But again, I mean, ultimately, I think that this has to be about the agency of the people of Hong Kong to choose for themselves what they are going to do, and that cannot happen when the Beijing government is telling them that they can. You can vote for anyone you like as long as it's one of these pre-selected candidates. So again, there's a bigger picture to what's happening here that we have to keep in mind.
We're going to take a break in just 15, 20 seconds, but quick answer. Do you think the government of China has regrets about expanding to where they became a supplier of manufacturing items for the United States?
That's an excellent question, and I really don't know about that. I don't, I mean, certainly.
I finally got one. How long has it taken me to get a question that you couldn't exactly answer? Frank, make sure you record that one. We're going to take a break here, folks. We'll be back, talk a little more about China and whether they have regrets or they don't have regrets in just a moment. Please stay tuned. I'm Alfred Addis. I'm here with James Corbett from the Corbett Report. We'll be right back.
pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today, or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm talking to James Corbett from the Corbett Report, CORBETTREPORT.com. Talking about when we were discussing the possibility that people in the Chinese government may be realizing that they've kind of been trapped by the United States and all the progress they made. Some of them may be longing from the good old days when they had just a straight-out communism. And some elements might be saying, listen, we're making money, we have automobiles, but maybe this isn't our best choice. Now, I got excited because I finally asked a question that James couldn't exactly answer, so I interrupted there. But do you have anything else you'd like to add relative to that question, or should we move on?
Right. No, I'll take my crack at it, which is to say that there are, as you say, there are elements in society and in the Chinese government that have benefited from what's gone on and obviously want that to continue. And then there are other elements that I'm sure, as you say, are pining for some sort of glorified past in which there was a much smaller elite that ruled more iron-fistedly over a much larger segment of the population. What we're seeing now really is the creation of a, not exactly a middle class. I don't know if you could really transplant that idea onto the Chinese system, which is still very much centrally controlled, but at any rate, a burgeoning number of people who are making money and are obviously have a much higher standard of living. That comes at a great cost in a lot of other ways, societally, environmentally, and otherwise. But at any rate, that is happening. So those people are somewhat invested in the system and want to see this continue. But I think, again, when we look at it from the perspective of that 3D chess game, as we were talking about before, it's the question of to what extent do the elements of the Chinese ruling class understand that they have been positioned and engineered into the position they're in by that regulatory and tax framework and all of those other ways, the international trade treaties and the other things that have made China into the juggernaut it is? And to what extent are they comfortable with that, knowing that that plug could be pulled at any time if that need was seen. I don't have any window into the Chinese government. I don't know who's puppeteering what and who is aware of what's happening and all of those types of intrigues. But it's like anything else, I would say there's different factions that exist, and I'm sure some of them are aware of what's going on and are probably uncomfortable with the fact that they are now in the position they're in because of the heavy investment of Fortune 500 companies and the tax framework of the United States and the international trade treaties they've signed and other such things, which have obviously changed the fabric of Chinese society.
I'd say, if I had to guess, that the principal agents of whatever it is that the United States is trying to impose on China would simply be the Chinese people who have become corporate executives. And they're able to make, I'm sure that some of them are making, fabulous incomes. And they have to have a kind of influence on the government that the bureaucrats are not familiar with and probably don't exactly know how to resist. It's almost as if we had taken one of those species that's under control in a foreign country, pythons, turned them loose in the Everglades. All right? We have a foreign invasive species. They are corporate executives. They don't have to be secret agents of the United States. They can be as patriotic Chinese as you could find, and yet just the interest in being a corporate executive is going to compel you into a certain kind of conflict with the bureaucrats that are running the Chinese government. Does that sound plausible, reasonable, or...
Yes. I mean, again, it's a complicated thing because the corruption, of course, goes both ways. And obviously, there's bribery and kickbacks that these local communist officials get in return for looking the other way on this or that violation. And then there's this interesting other phenomenon that's occurring with some degree of some type of communication possible on the heavily censored Chinese internet, where you have these so-called netizens, the growing number of Chinese people online in various Chinese social media, who take pictures of Chinese officials, for example, and examine them and see their Rolex watches and other things that they couldn't possibly afford on their salary, which becomes scandals, which ultimately unseat some of these officials. So there's an interesting dynamic going on there, but I think this is part of what's so opaque about it, is that we don't know the machinations that go on. And, you know, when there's a crackdown on corrupt officials at a local level from Beijing, I mean, to what extent is that politically motivated? To what extent is that just PR? There was that bizarre story a year or two ago that I'm not going to remember the details of off the top of my head, but it was a rising political star in the Chinese Communist Party who got completely taken out of the picture, got put up on corruption charges.
Did he have a wife who was accused of poisoning people?
Right. It was a bizarre story that started to spin out of control, and there's a lot more to it.
Shakespearean, practically. It was, Chinese version of Othello.
Yeah, it was interesting. But again, that's the type of thing that, unless you have a window into the sort of backroom deliberations, I mean, it's probably impossible for us to piece that together from the outside.
Here's another one we can speculate on. Reuters has a headline, Finance Minister, they're talking about the Finance Minister of Russia, warns Russia can't afford military spending plan. Now, Russia's getting squeezed economically. Is this simply a natural result of perhaps Putin going too far with his plans? Or is this evidence that the economic sanctions the United States has attempted to place on Russia are having an effect?
Well, probably both. I mean, Russia is obviously being pressured into flexing more of its military might, if only in terms of military drills and what have you at the moment. But of course, that involves a great degree of preparedness. And obviously, the Russian government is still continuing to have to try to maintain and even increase their military forces in the wake of all of this turmoil, including the turmoil right on their doorstep in Ukraine. So that requires a lot more expenditure. And add to that the sanctions that have been put in place that are having an effect on the Russian economy. And yes, it creates a perfect storm, I suppose, of kind of bankrupting the Russian government piece by piece. And we're starting to see the beginnings of that. And it really, again, it brings into focus the question of who could really compete with the U.S. and its allies, NATO, basically, militarily, on the world stage. Absolutely no one. I mean, the United States has whatever the figure is, I recently tweeted an infographic with the exact numbers, but it's something like the military budget of the next, whatever, 10 biggest military powers combined.
I agree. We have an enormous military budget, and it's not just competitive. The rest of the world couldn't possibly keep up with us, at least individual nations. There's no way at this time. They cannot compete. Now, they may find some remarkable technology. You can imagine the China, for example. Got a lot of intellectual potential over there. They could develop some bizarre new technology, and all of a sudden we've give us a real run for the money. But for the moment, it's a little like you talked earlier. We've got a certain amount of a paper tiger there, and they're not as powerful as perhaps a lot of people suspect. I've seen the price of crude oil has fallen significantly in the last 6 or 8 weeks. Do you think that fall, and it's surprising given the problems we have in the Middle East, it's explained, according to some, by increased U.S. production? But I wonder myself if the falling price of crude oil is simply a consequence of increased supply and diminished global demand just because the economies are in a rut. Or is this being done and manipulated intentionally to put Russia in a bind? Much of their income comes from crude oil and petroleum
point. Right. No, that's an important observation. And in fact, oilprice.com had an article just a couple of months ago, dropping oil prices threaten Moscow's budget. Mm-hmm. And the exact point they're making is what you're talking about there. I mean, obviously, the Russian economy relies largely on the oil and gas benefits that Russia has from its natural resources. Falling oil price is definitely bad for Russia in those terms. So, I don't know whether or not the falling oil price is being used is being created as a type of geopolitical warfare, but it has that effect, whatever the case may be. So it certainly is important geopolitically in that respect. And I mean, there are a number of factors that go into that, including what obviously has happened in the last few years of shale oil production, which has formed that glut in the refineries in the United States and has contributed to the falling price. I mean, there are certain reasons why it is rational that the price has fallen, but it does have those political implications.
Well, one of the other points that's interesting to me is the price of oil is falling more or less at the time when Russia and China are attempting to negotiate a pipeline or a series of pipelines where Russia is going to be supplying more crude oil to China. And do you suppose that the current falling prices have any effect on the pipeline negotiations?
They certainly would, wouldn't they? And I am not familiar with those types of deals. I think you've hit on another thing that I'm not knowledgeable about, which is how these types
two
of deals
in a row.
Are.
Oh, two in the same program. Amazing.
Oh, my God. I'm flipping.
Yep. I'm
not familiar with how those deals are structured. Obviously, they would have to take into account the market prices because you wouldn't want to lock in on some 20-year deal at a certain price and then the price plummets or rises. So there must be some way that is factored in there. It would have an effect, obviously, on the negotiations. But at this point, I mean, it's not a precipitous plummeting of prices. And if you look at the trends over the past 3 years, there has been a couple of spikes and a couple of falls, and the current plunge in the latter half of 2014 is not a huge dip on the graph. It's noticeable, but it's not huge. So I think at this point we're not seeing a major disruption in oil prices, nothing like what we saw a few years ago with the price plummeting precipitously back when everyone was thinking it was going to go to $200 a barrel. Suddenly it went the exact other way. We haven't seen anything like that that would really throw a major monkey wrench into the works.
I've got another one over in Iran. We have the Parchin facility. It's a military camp located about 15 kilometers east of Tehran. Research is conducted on the production of explosives, missile warheads, as well as some activities associated with a nuclear weapons group. They have reportedly had an explosion in the last little while.
And I'm reading a report that says the West will know within a few days what caused the explosion at the Iranian military complex. And it says the magnitude of the explosion, which left two people dead and several wounded, the flash and the huge blast felt many kilometers away leave no room for doubt that this facility is related to a nuclear program. Now, they don't know. They're just saying is related to a nuclear program. They're not alleging that this was a nuclear blast. And yet they are alleging some relationship. Is this relationship legitimate? Is it valid? Or is it just hyperbole where people are sitting back and saying, let's try to create evidence that the Iranians are making nuclear weapons?
Well, I would take any of these reports that come out about Iran's facilities with a grain of salt, because there is going to be obfuscation on both sides of this, and it's going to be difficult to come to a conclusion, even if the facts, even if they were revealed in some sort of IAEA report, the reporting of those facts would undoubtedly become skewed in the process of reporting. So it's there's always so many layers of obfuscation going on. Parchin is interesting because it's been one of those sticking points in negotiations about IAEA access to facilities around Iran and whether Iran is complying with IAEA requests. Parchin has been one of those facilities that has been mentioned specifically. So the fact that there was this explosion at that facility in particular is, well, whatever, however it happened, again, is convenient, I think, for the people that want greater access to the Iranian nuclear program. And so, again, I don't know whether they're, I mean, I'm assuming they're going to come out with something saying this was in some way related to nuclear production.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that seems
no surprise.
Yeah, the only way that
yellow
that
cake and centrifuges and
exactly,
anything that goes bang in the dark, it's evidence of nuclear. We've got maybe a minute left, so maybe one last question. How do you rate Obama and the Obama administration? Is he just incompetent, or is he one of the sharpest operators around, or at least his administration, insofar as they are manipulating Russia, they're manipulating China? Who's smart?
I would say Obama's just a stuffed suit. I don't put a lot of stock in the idea that that the presidents really run things in the way that the popular imagination has it. I mean, even not even talking from the conspiratorial angle about the shadow government, but I mean, just even talking about the way the administration functions, I just think the president is a teleprompter reader and doesn't even do a great job at that. But his administration, is it crafty? Does it have some sort of purpose that it's aiming at? I think on the surface, absolutely not. It seems to be flailing about and reacting to events in incompetent ways, whether it's Ebola or ISIS or what have you. But again, I think that's because the administration is not necessarily what's in control of the U.S. political apparatus. And I think
let it go at that, James. I want to thank you again for being on the program, but we are out of time. And I want to thank all you folks for listening. My guest is James Corbett from the Corbett Report, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com. I'm Alfred Addisk. Be back mañana. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Frank the producer, and James Corbett. Bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.